Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. And we are here, folks. We're at the season finale of Season 1, Tempest, 21 episodes in. Smallville's, well, I was going to say Smallville's shortest season. It's its second shortest season, but we'll get into that about six seasons down the road. Anyway, this week I'm joined by Matt Truex from Lois and Clark, the new adventures or the new podcast of Superman, right, Matt?
That's it. Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. So Matt, you guys found us on the internet somewhere? How did you find Always Hold On to Smallville? Because we kind of connected via the internet.
Yeah, I reached out to you. Basically, we finished the first season of Lois and Clark, where, you know, and we were doing, like, our summer screening series, which is what we've called it, because, like, all season, my co-host, just for those unfamiliar with our podcast real quick, my co-host doesn't know the show at all, and I know it from, like, you know, like the back of my hand. I know it as a kid, grew up with it, blah, blah, blah. So over the season, I've been like, oh, you should watch Smallville. You should watch Superman Returns. You should watch, you know, whatever. So we watched the Smallville pilot, right after our season finale. And I was like, you know, like, God, if this show wasn't 10 seasons, I would love to do a podcast about it. You know, like, 'cause it just seems like such a commitment. And I was just looking around like, well, I'd listen to a podcast about it. And you had just started, I think, a couple weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. So it was really perfect timing. So I reached out to you, and you were nice enough to have me on here, and hopefully we'll get you on to Lois and Clark later this season.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, man. Lois and Clark is, I would say it's like the forgotten series of Superman. It's not. People remember it. Superboy is the forgotten Superman.
And the kid who played him season one is the forgotten Superboy of the forgotten Superboy.
it's Inception levels of forgetfulness, Superman. Here.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, Lois and Clark, it gets a bad rap, I think. Obviously, it got pretty bad at the end. I think even you'd agree with that.
Yeah, well, okay. But we can talk season 10 of Smallville here, too, if you want. Here's the thing. Look, Smallville is probably a far superior show in almost every sense. At least Dean Cain put the costume on. And he put it on regularly. You know, like, that's a cool thing to see him walking around and just, like, being Superman.
It's a deep cut, man. You just played the trump card on me. I can't defend that right off the top. I see how it's going to be. All right.
Oh, yeah. Guns drawn here.
So, you know, speaking of Smallville, how did you first start watching Smallville? Did you watch from the start? Did you find it later on? How did that go for you?
Yeah, I did watch from the start. Like I said, like, Lois and Clark was... I've always been a Batman fan. I don't remember what my first Batman was, because, like, even as a kid, there was the animated series, there was the Adam West show, there was the Tim Burton, you know, like, it was just, like, everything was Batman.
Same here, yeah.
My intro to Superman was, hands down, the Lois and Clark was rerunning on the TNT network. And that taught me everything about Superman. And specifically, it taught me he came from Smallville, you know? So it was over, like, the summer of 2001, I was watching whatever on the WB, and they had, like, a quick, like, it must have been 15-second teaser. I don't know if it's out there or online or whatever. It was just the meteor's going to Earth, and you saw the ship in there, and it's starting to break the atmosphere, and then it was just a black card that said Smallville, and I'm like, oh, it's a Superman show, you know, like, oh my God, this is so exciting. So yeah, from then, like, you know, set my VCR to record the pilot, and then was in love with the show after that. And just, like, you know, like, I had the Letterman jacket and all the custom, the figures when they came out, and customized the figures. And you were talking, you've got the Kryptonian key prop. I do too. And, you know, like, later in life, when I moved out to California, I was working as a tour guide at WB for a little bit. And in the museum, they had the Welcome to Smallville, like, Meteor Capital of the World sign.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's what my logo is based off of.
Yeah, I know. I love it. And I fell in love with the sign. I was just like, God, I like, want that in my apartment. So my father made me a slightly scaled down version of it that now, like, still hangs over my bed. Like, I'm a big fan, man.
So did you stick with it all 10 years?
I did, yeah. You know, like, I was real worried at the end of season 7, and then I wound up really liking Tess Mercer after a little while, so I stuck it out. I hope this isn't inflammatory, because you can talk about Dean Cain all you want. After a while, I really wasn't watching for Clark. I was really watching for kind of the world of it. I loved Chloe. I loved Oliver, I love Tess. And then the Clark stuff was always like, okay, like, let's get there, you know, like keep chugging it along. Because obviously it went longer than they ever thought it would.
Yeah, at least twice as long as they thought.
Totally.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's such a cast turnover too, right? I mean,
yeah.
Tom Welling and then Allison Mack. I mean, she had a smaller role in season 10, but the two of them were the only cast members, main cast members, that lasted all the way through from season 1 to season 10. And, I mean, I guess that's a common thing you see. Look at shows like That 70 Show or
sure.
Scrubs or, you know.
Or even, like shows that go longer, like SVU right now. I don't watch it anymore, but, like, just one character is still there. You know,
yeah,
like, it's nuts.
It's tough because, yes, I love Smallville, and I'm glad there's so much, but then I'm kind of – I wish it was shorter, but I wish it was more condensed, you know.
Like, yeah, if it was a tighter 6 seasons or something like that.
With, like, 13 episodes a season.
Right. It would have been awesome, you know. But, like, at the same time, like, look, it was the only thing waving the flag for superheroes on TV. You know, like, they made such a big deal, like, Hawk Girl's on TV now in Legends. And it's just like – you know what? Hawkman was running around Smallville for a while, too. You know, like, there's precedent there. Like, it really did pave the way for a lot. So while it was on, I was not going like, oh, I wish this was shorter. You know, I was just really happy to have this thing from my childhood. Even as I went into college and all this stuff, as life changed so much, like, Smallville's still on. You know, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've said it several times, but I was the same age as Clark on the show. So I literally, like, became an adult. through watching this show. I didn't want it to end. You know, I was like, oh, let's keep going. Now, I think the miscalculation here was, if it's going to last for 10 years, about 5 years in, he should have became Superman, and then sure, you can have 5 more years.
But sure, you absolutely.
You can't have 10 years of him not being Superman. That's the huge, you know, in my opinion, the huge misstep here. And I understand there's all kinds of, like, behind the scenes where he's, oh, the movie department, this and that, and
Returns has happened.
Yeah, Superman Returns happened. And
that's funny you say that you're Clark's age when it was premiering, because I was a little younger. I was in middle school, so, like, I'm watching Smallville going like, oh, high school, like, every week you solve a different crime and somebody winds up in the hospital and a car blows up. That's high school, sounds good, you know.
You know, did you ever watch Doug when you were a kid, the cartoon?
I loved Doug.
So I loved Doug, too. I mean, you know, I was a little kid watching that, like, elementary school, right? And I thought Doug was in high school. No, apparently Doug was in elementary school. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, he was like 4th or 5th grade, right? But he seemed like an adult. You're right.
Yeah, they're like going to the movies. They're hanging out at the mall. I'm like, I'm 7 years old. My mom's going to let me go hang out at the mall by myself.
Totally.
Crazy. But, yeah, it really warps your perception of, like, what life is going to be like, you know, when you watch something that occurs in a later stage of life. So it's always funny. And now it's just so nostalgic, right? To go back and watch some of it.
And now being like 20 something, it's fun to, like, watch, especially this, like, I haven't seen season 1 stuff really in a while. So watching Tom Welling play a 14 or 15 year old, whatever, at what was he, 25, 26 when the show started?
He was 10 years older than Clark throughout the whole show.
It's crazy, which I guess you get away with him since Kryptonian or whatever, but for the rest of the cast, too, it's just as glaring.
Yeah, you know, Allison Mack, Sam Jones III, and even Kristen Crook were at least sort of age-appropriate, but Tom Welling and then most of the guest stars were way too old to be. And as we'll see, as we talk about the you know, they have the spring formal in this episode. So you see a big group of 35-year-old men and women dancing at the Smallville gym. Yeah.
I wasn't even looking at the extras.
Well, cool, Matt. So I think we have a good, you know, base of where your fandom is and all that. I think we've heard about my fandom plenty of times on this show. So yeah, let's go ahead and jump into it. Tempest.
So Whitney's off to fight evil for Uncle Sam.
I heard.
That technically makes Lana a free agent.
He asked her to wait for him.
Long-distance relationships never work. People change, have different experiences. It's kind of like us, you know? I'm sure after a couple of weeks, you'll forget all about me.
Chloe.
Okay, I have this horrible nightmare that you are gonna rush to the bus station after Whitney leaves and profess your undying love for Lana, and I'm gonna be waiting at the gym all alone, and if you do that to me, Clark, I will never speak to you again. Okay?
Tempest is the 21st episode of Smallville's first season and aired on May 21st, 2002. It was written by Alfred Gow and Miles Miller, with a story by Philip Levins, and directed by Greg Beeman. So Tempest opens up, and we have an awesome first shot of Lex on a helicopter pad, on a helipad, on top of Luthor Corp. And it's a very, you could take this out of any, like, Superman movie, like, shot of Lex Luthor. It's a really awesome shot of Rosenbaum, I thought.
No, I agree. Like, and I've watched a lot of the later seasons, you know, recently. But, like, it's great to go back and see, like, look, they went on location a lot, you know? Like, they got helicopters a lot because the show just becomes so set-driven, especially when they build their little, like, Metropolis lane there, you know? So it's just cool to see them on location, big budget, helicopter, the whole thing.
Yeah, and this is the Luthor Corp plant, which is, you know, the Luthor Corp plant was a big deal in the first season. You know, they went on a field trip there. You know, they were always talking about it. I feel like after this season, even though it's there, you know, the rest of the show, this is like the last episode it's actually ever featured in any way. Perhaps because Lionel Luthor shows up, you know, on a helicopter. That's why Lex is out there. He's waiting for Lionel to show up. Always a treat to see John Glover.
Oh, so good. So good.
He was just a guest star in season one, but he became a regular starting next year. But he shows up and he's shaking hands and saying hello to people, and he has an impromptu announcement. And, you know, we see Chloe's dad, Gabe Sullivan, is there. So a rare appearance by Chloe's father.
He gets a couple scenes in this episode.
He does.
Too.
He shows up
with Lex later, too.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I know, right? And Lionel, basically, he just congratulates everyone on a job well done, but says, to circumstances beyond their control and to inept mismanagement, he's having to close the Luthor Corp plant. And he wishes them all good luck, and he leaves.
Yeah, that's...
That's pretty cold, huh?
Now, yeah, here's my, like, first question for you. Like, I think I know the answer, but I'd love to get your take on it. Like, where did this plan come up? Did he send Lex to Smallville thinking that my son will never amount to anything, at least he can just live out his life over here? Or did he go, okay, maybe he could actually become something? Like, did he have faith when he sent him to Smallville?
Well, I think the thing with Lionel and Lex is, Lex is his only son. So...
Well, yeah, now.
Yeah, well, yeah, we say that. at this point in time, I think in Lionel's eyes, Lex is a failure.
Oh, totally.
And I think it was a form of exile, obviously, as a punishment. But also, I think always in the back of his head, Lionel said, all right, well, this is a test. This is a training ground for him. Perhaps he can, you know, learn, make something of himself here. Now, had Lex not gotten in the car accident with Clark that kind of shifted his life, you know, I think Lex would have continued down that destructive, narcissistic path that he had.
Right.
But since he had a big life-changing event like that, then he really made something of himself, and that is what really caught Lionel's attention. And that's why, you know, as Lex analyzed the situation, Lionel actually became threatened by Lex because he's like, oh man, my son finally got his act together.
I felt the same thing. It's a little like, okay, you're doing too well here, so let me mess it up for you. You know, like it's very cool that throughout the series, especially when it's like grounded like this, when we're not talking about kryptonite and, you know, the later stuff, like, it's really just cool to see the father-son dynamic play out here.
Right. And then we go to the opening credits, and this is the last time we see our season one opening credits, because this, they redo the opening credits next year. And we come back, and it is we're at Smallville High School, and everybody's worried about the spring formal that's this weekend, right? Clark and Pete are talking about their tuxes. Clark's trying to decide between red and black, and you know, for Ty Cummerbund or whatever. And he's not sure about red. And then Lana, I guess, eavesdrops and comes into this conversation. She says, oh, I don't know, Clark. Red always looks good on you. I was like, oh, all right, there it is. Another Superman reference, anvil over the head, whatever.
But that one's not too terrible.
It's not, though. It's not. But I've watched every episode of Smallville. It's really starting to wear thin on me, okay?
Fair enough. There's one later on, too, isn't there?
There is, and we'll get there.
Okay.
But, you know, I really, if I had the time, I'm busy enough living life and editing this podcast and stuff. If I had the time, I would make a super cut, no pun intended, of all the Superman references on this show. And seriously, it'd be mind-numbing about 2 minutes into it.
It'd be also be hours long.
Yeah. It's a very in-depth maybe when the podcast is done in 5 years, I'll sit down
and
do that.
In 5 years, you have to give it another year to miss doing the podcast enough to go back and do that.
Exactly.
But, you know, I'll still be watching when you do it.
Well,
so good luck to you.
I appreciate
You're
that.
Welcome.
That's the beauty about the Lois and Clark podcast. It doesn't take you near as long to do.
Yeah, that's true. We have four seasons and we're out, so yeah. That's...
You know, they're walking down the hallway here, and Chloe comes up to them and says, "Did you guys hear? They closed the Luther Corp plant." And it's a big deal to Chloe because, as we referenced, her father works at the plant. He's one of the head guys at the Luther Corp plant, so obviously it's going to hit her pretty hard. Clark goes home, and the Kents are reading a special edition of the Smallville Ledger they put out to announce the closing of the Luther Corp plant. In this age of newspaper, this pre-digital age, huh? That's always funny about this show.
And first time they've put out a special edition since the meteor shower,
I know,
too.
So it's like crazy. 13 years.
But, I was thinking the same thing. Like, not even when the plant opened, you know?
You know, there's some back and forth here between Clark and the Kents. He tells Jonathan, "I thought you'd be happy. This means Lex will be leaving, and you've wanted him out of our lives." And Jonathan says, "Yes, of course, but it's not that simple, Clark. We had, you know, 2,500 people lose their jobs. There's a domino effect on this entire community, and it's really going to mess up our, you know, economy and everything." And, you know, that's a really, I mean, I'm glad they addressed that. You know, it goes way beyond Lex and Lionel's power play between the two of them.
Agreed. And again, it's just like, it's so cool to see the show be so grounded early on, you know, and ground, you know, like, I know Superman's still there, but like what they're dealing with, especially in the character stuff, is just so relatable or real world, at least. And to think, like, you know, at the end of next season, he's putting on a green or a red kryptonite ring and, you know, acting like a dick because this magic rocks makes him feel that way. You know, like, it's just, it gets so... so crazy so quickly. It's nice to see it all. Like, even the supervillain of this episode being a tornado is a really cool thing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Smallville, I don't think it's jumped the shark yet. I do feel like, well, you mentioned the Red Kryptonite episode, right? I think that's when it jumps the shark the first time. And then it continues to jump more and more sharks as the series progresses. But
And again, like, I don't want to be your negative guest either. Like, please know, I love this show.
Oh, yeah, I feel like I'm too negative sometimes, but I'm like, okay. Look, guys, I'm the one doing the podcast. Clearly, I have a love for this show. I wouldn't have committed, you know, 10 seasons exactly of my life to this show. But, you know, you gotta, I call it how I see it. Like, I have a lot of love and a lot of nostalgia for Smallville. It holds a special place in my heart. But it does some stupid stuff later on, you know, and I gotta call out on that. But it hasn't done anything unforgivable just yet. So we go to our next scene. It's between Whitney and Lana. This is a good scene for them. This is a good episode for Whitney and Lana. This is, I would say, by far the best episode to feature the two of them as a couple.
Yeah, you're probably right. Maybe part of that too is just like they don't really have a plot that they're playing at. You know, it's character stuff. He's leaving, so they get to have their goodbye scenes, you know?
Yeah, Eric Johnson had this to say. Now, once again, most of my behind the scenes trivia comes from Smallville, the official companion, season one by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. You know, somebody asked me, like, like where they could find this, and I gave them that answer, and they're like, "Oh, okay, thanks." And I felt like, "Okay, no. I was just kind of kidding. Here's a link to Amazon. You're probably gonna have to get it used. Like, it's out of print.
You're actually never gonna see this on a shelf again. Yeah. So you're gonna need to start digging."
Oh man, but anyway, Eric Johnson had this to say about Whitney in this episode. He and Lana have their private little dance before the spring formal, and it's really sweet and romantic. That's a side of Whitney I was always trying to tell people about. He's a nice guy, and he likes Lana a lot. The season finale showed a little more of his emotional side. Now, he's referencing a scene that happens later, but the point is the same. Like, they play Whitney up as the obstacle boyfriend character to Clark, right? And for the first, gosh, two-thirds of the season, that's all he is. And then, you know, they add some plot lines about his father being sick and stuff like that. Gives him other stuff to do. And that helps flesh him out. And then by the end of the season, I felt like not only did Whitney become a better character, but I think Eric Johnson really became a better actor. I felt him in this episode, you know, like the emotions he was putting out. I felt it, you know, he was sad about leaving. He was conflicted about Lana. They're not being on the solidest ground right now. I look at an episode like Kinetic, which by my ratings and the podcast ratings is the worst episode of Smallville thus far. the one with the dude bros and the kryptonite tattoos, right?
Oh, I remember kryptonite tattoos.
That was the Whitney episode. And just a huge misfire on every level. And Whitney and Eric Johnson have both come a long way since then.
Agreed. Quick question here, though. Like, she thinks he's going to propose for a second,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. I was going to ask that. So he's digging through his backpack, and she starts to think, like, oh, no. And she says, Whitney, maybe we should. It's like, whoa. Did you think he was just going to propose to you? That I didn't pick up on that until I rewatched it for the podcast here. And, what are you, 15? Like,
Exactly. It never occurred to me how ludicrous that was until watching it the other day for this and just being like, whoa,
yeah, man,
hold on, WB.
As I was 15 at the time, that wasn't on my mind either when I first saw it. So, but what was she trying to do there? Break up with him? Like, because she tries to stop him for a second, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, she would have said no. Oh.
Yeah, I know, right? She said no. You know, you see all these engagements on like, social media and Facebook, Twitter, mm-hmm. be it, and it's always a picture of the woman's hand and the ring, and it's like, she said yes. I would love sometime for somebody, like, if she said no, you have a picture of like the ring still in the box and and yourself looking sad, like, she said no.
Or the return receipt for the ring, you know?
Anyway, engagement stories, right? They're always fun. Mm-hmm. But that's not what's going on here. It's Whitney has joined the Marines, and he has to ship out on Saturday. What'd you think of this plot line?
I think it's obviously it's a very easy way to get rid of him and to gain some respect for the character, especially, I mean, not to bring 9/11 up, but especially the time this was made, you know? Mm-hmm. It just feels so strange the way that they present it to Lana, like, him saying he's doing it for them. It's like, no, you're really not.
I'm doing this for us. That's like the most cliche thing to ever say about any choice in life, right?
And one of those cliche things that mean absolutely nothing in the real world. You know, like, I've never analyzed it too much because it's always been, it's Smallville season one. It's like what I lived with, you know, it's mythology to me. But yeah, it is just, it's a little bit easy, but I totally understand why they had to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then he caps everything off with saying, will you wait for me? And we just see Lana look at him and we cut away. So we don't know how that ended up. But then we cut to Clark at the Luther Mansion and he sees the octagonal disc on Lex's desk.
Oh, here we go. Now, you've just rewatched the whole season. Is this the first time he sees that, the key?
That is correct. The whole concept of the spaceship missing a piece was invented... in the last episode, Obscura, you know, I mean, we'd seen different versions of the spaceship. I know you have an obsession with the Lois and Clark spaceship.
I do, yes.
Well, Smallville has a similar various versions of the ship.
Oh, I know, yeah. I, as a kid, I made my little clay model of this, too, dutifully, because I was a fan, and I had to have it all, you know?
You know, we didn't know. We saw it a few episodes ago, but we didn't know there was a missing piece, right? But then that great final scene from Obscura last week's episode that we talked about, we see that Lex has found the missing piece. And it's not just, like, a piece that broke off, right? It's not like Roswell where you found a crash and here's a piece of it. This is clearly, like, a key of some sort that has an exact place in the ship that will activate it. That's the implication there. So that's what's so cool about the octagonal disc. But Lex just, you know, just left it on his desk for Clark to find. And Clark comments, nice paperweight. And Lex is like, yeah, it is. And they just move on from it. But Clark has come to kind of show some support for Lex, because obviously Lex is taking a lot of heat right now because they closed the Luthor Corp plant. And, you know, obviously this is all due to Lionel and Lex's behind-the-scenes power play. And Clark asked Lex, why don't you just tell people what's going on, you know, that your father offered you a job in Metropolis, and that way people wouldn't think you ran the plant into the ground so you could leave. And, you know, Lex just says he'd rather be reviled than seen as incompetent. So that's his take on that.
Very Lex reaction to...
It's true. And Rosenbaum's a great Lex. I mean, is he your favorite, or is John Shea your favorite?
Live action Lex, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Rosenbaum. And, you know, like, obviously he had a lot longer than, for anyone that doesn't know Lois and Clark, John Shea played Lex for the first season and then came back usually once a season after that. But, like, you know, Rosenbaum lived with him for 7 years. Like, he was fantastic. I also happen to love Clancy Brown's voice of Lex in the animated stuff, you know, but live action for sure.
Yeah. John Shea's a solid number two, though, I think.
I don't get me wrong. Like, in our podcast, we'll just sit there and just fawn over him because he's so good. He has so much fun with it. But, like, just seeing the, you know, the fall from grace for Lex over the years is so fun to watch. And he brings so much to it. He's such a charismatic guy that when he does go evil, you really feel it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And in these early seasons and early episodes, Clark and him are still truly friends. You know, this episode especially, they're, you know, checking in on each other, you know, being friends and all that. And there's no, like drama there. You know, there's no, obviously, you know, Lex has done a little bit of investigation and Clark has, you know, evaded a few truths to Lex, but on the most part, they're pretty much on the level. And it's just, it's so nice to see and then tragic at the same time because you know where it's headed.
For sure. Also, like early on, like I feel like, once we get a couple seasons down the road, just like every episode, everybody's lying to everybody about something.
Yes.
Like it's funny to see these episodes and just like Lex is the only one really playing a secret, obviously. Obviously, Clark has his secret, but that's just kind of a standard thing. But like, it's funny to see Lex so cavalierly and calmly lying to him a couple times in this episode.
Oh yeah, yeah, we'll get to that too. But then, you know, the scene ends and Clark leaves, and we see that Lex puts the octagonal disc in this very specifically shaped box for it. And I thought, one, why did you get this box? Like, did you create it especially for the disc because it's the perfect size?
Thought the same thing.
And two, why wasn't it in there to begin with, you know? But anyway,
because sometimes you just have to fondle your spaceship keys, you know. It's just, that's life as a billionaire.
Maybe he really was using it as a paperweight.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, we go back to Smallville High School, and Chloe's at the Torch, and she's kind of down because you know, she might have to move back to Metropolis because, you know, obviously her dad worked at the plant. And, you know, that's that. And they're from Metropolis originally. So, you know, this kind of gets Clark down because he hadn't really thought about the repercussions. And once again, these are real life repercussions of something like the Luther Corp plant closing, how it affects all the characters. I feel like they did a good job exploring how that would affect everybody.
Agreed.
So Lex has a secret meeting with this is our second appearance by Gabe Sullivan in this episode. He has a secret meeting with the head guys at the Luther Corp plant. And he wants to lead an employee buyout. And against his father to get control back. So I like this. Again, a very, you know, adult plot here going on.
Yeah, I was amazed how much we talked about this fertilizer plant in the middle of a WB show. You know, like, they do spend a lot of time on it. Also, like, just watching this episode in general, are you a Buffy fan at all?
You know, I never watched Buffy. I didn't.
Okay. Maybe some listeners will get this. It felt very much like the end of season one for Buffy, which is called Prophecy Girl. Where it's just like, it's very ominous the whole time. You know, this big thing is coming. And like, there's natural disasters involved in that episode. They play the theme song in the episode like they do here. You know, like, there was just a couple things. Yeah, a couple similarities watching this. I was just like, oh, okay, this is kind of their Prophecy Girl.
Well, Buffy was really an inspiration for Smallville, as I understand it. So they probably just, interesting, I didn't know that. They cut and pasted a few things in there for now.
Yeah, like, not, you know, there was no tornado or anything, but just the overall feel of like, okay, this is going to be the big thing that we do, you know?
Right. And then we go to the Torch, not the Torch, the town. See, too many, these Smallville locations, they all start with T. I don't know, they're either at the Torch or at the Tower.
All these characters with their L's, what's happening?
So Clark runs by the Talon, and Lana's there because, you know, she's a 15-year-old who works full-time at a coffee shop. And where's Aunt Nell? Where's she been? I haven't seen her in a while, and she's supposed to be the manager.
Oh, she hadn't left yet, has she?
No, she's still supposed to be in Smallville.
Oh,
so.
Boy.
You know, Clark's not in a good mood, and he comes into the Talon, and Lana picks up on this, so they talk a little bit, and he expresses to her that, you know, Chloe might have to move back to Metropolis. And that's gonna, you know, he hadn't really considered that. And Lana says, I know how you feel. And Clark's like, you do? And she says, yeah, Whitney enlisted to join the Marines. And then she says that he asked her to wait for her, and she said nothing. Ouch, right?
Yeah, a few things here. First of all, love the fact that the minute Chloe is leaving his life, he goes straight to Lana Lang.
Yeah, you know, yeah, not a good look.
Not a great look for him. Maybe you can refresh my memory. How much does she know about his undying love for her at this point?
It's pretty established that she knows that he likes her. And they had a couple of brushes in season one where they could have gotten together, but Clark was the better man and decided not to break up her relationship with Whitney, although he easily could have. So it's pretty well understood. And in these last couple episodes, they've really cranked up the jealousy factor from Lana about Clark and Chloe, which is really not a good look for her either.
No, and I loved Lana. I've heard you talk about that on the podcast a few times, but, like, I loved Lana.
Yeah, you when you look back in season one, because I think everybody was liked Clark. Everyone loved the idea of Clark and Lana getting together in season one. You're supposed to, right? That's the ship, right. The relationship of the series, right? But for various reasons, you know, I feel like their ships passed in the night, and they were through with that, and it didn't really work out. But yet they insisted on, like, the powers that be insisted that no. This is the ship that you're supposed to like for the rest of the series, and for several years, this is all we got. But then you had, I think the character of Chloe and Allison Mack was kind of a revelation. They didn't expect the fan base and then the actress, and just everything came together so well. Allison Mack and Tom Welling had such great chemistry, and so they started to play into that a little bit. And then here we are at the end of season one, and, you know, it's Clark and Chloe are, you know, trying out the whole dating thing, and I was definitely on board. I'm a Clark shipper. I love them as a couple. I think that's great, and they really complement each other very well, and much better than Lana and Clark do, I feel. And so it's a weird place to be, because the show is like, yeah, they're giving you some Clark Chloe, but they're also trying to still leave some Clark Lana in there. Even here, Lana says to, you know, she tells Clark that, oh yeah, Whitney asked me to wait for him, and Clark's like, what did you say? like, come on, man! You're like dating Chloe now. Give it a break, right?
But, cool it just a little bit there, Kent. Yeah.
And this is the second reference that we were talking about earlier. She says, "Yeah, it's hard to believe. One day he's playing football, the next day he's putting on a uniform and saving the world."
That's it. But again, like, that one, I'm fine with. Like, you're right when they say stuff like faster than a speeding bullet. It's just like, well, where did you hear that?
Leaving,
you
know, tall theories in a single bound.
Yeah. Was that one?
Yeah.
God. This might be an insider baseball-y question for mm-hmm. you, but I'm just going to do it.
Good, I'm glad you used that term. I use that term a lot myself. So.
Oh, do you? Did you think that they were going to kill her at some point? Because for years, I was like, okay, they kill her, and then that somehow becomes the catalyst for him putting the costume on finally.
Right. I thought for several years Chloe was gonna come to a bad end, you know. Obviously, you know, season three they hint that that's what they did,
right?
And then, you know, just in my last episode on Obscura, we talked a little bit about this, and like, man, maybe they should have killed Chloe. Like, as much as I love Allison Mack, I love Chloe, I love Clark, C-H-L-A-R-K, C-H-L, I think I spelled it wrong. The point being that I love Chloe. I think she's she is Smallville. Like, you think about Smallville, you
agreed.
Think Lionel totally. Luther, you think Chloe Sullivan, you think Meteor Rocks, right? These are things that are specific to Smallville.
She's the spoke that they added to the wheel of the mythology. Like, going forward, it's going to be kind of hard to talk about young Clark Kent without putting Chloe Sullivan.
Yeah, I'd say her and Lionel Luther are really the, as you say, the spokes added to the legend, because we've delved more into Lex's past as comics has progressed as well. So, where were we? Yes, so talking about Chloe being killed off and not, but so many times they would hint, oh, she's gonna die, oh, she's gonna go crazy because her mom had, you know, was apparently crazy. Oh no, her mom's Wonder Woman, never mind, she's not crazy, right? You know, oh, she's gonna get infected by Brainiac, or, you know, oh, she's gonna get kidnapped. There were so many situations, and Chloe, you know, they could do this with Chloe because she wasn't a mythology character, she was an invention of the show, so they could put her in peril, and you could be like, oh man, they really could do it to Chloe this time. But 7-8 years later, you're like, okay, I don't buy it, guys. You know,
it loses its punch. I remember when they do the Legion of Superheroes episode, and they come back, and Clark's telling them about Chloe, and they're just like, oh, we don't know who this is, and it was just another one of those, like, okay, are you really going to do this? Because if you are, keep it going. But if you're not, just stop with this, you know?
Well, you could say that about a lot of plot lines in Smallville, to be honest, unfortunately. But I'm glad she got a happy ending.
Yeah, me too. You know, the fact that she made it that long, it was just like, you know, at that point, I'd given up on the weird hope that she would die and somehow push him towards it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're saying, too, like, they play a really good cliffhanger at the end of this episode with Lionel, because they could, you know, like, we don't know, he's not from the comics, he might not be in season two, you know, like, it was a good choice of who to put, like, you know, the metaphorical gun up to at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I feel like, and we'll get to this at the end, I feel like almost every season finale of Smallville, how they tweaked it just a bit, could have been a series finale. You know, with the way they approached everything, and definitely this one more than almost any other. So yeah, so they, you know, Clark and Lana wrap up their conversation here, and we cut to Clark on the farm doing some chores, and he's angry about doing his chores. You know,
in the most stereotypical WB scene ever, done. There's angsty music. There's him like doing physical labor, so his muscles are all muscly. He's looking angsty. It was just like, oh, I missed this channel.
But then, you know, once he's done, you know, putting a fence post into the ground or whatever, mm-hmm. he gets in the truck, turns the key, boom. Kent truck blows up. And this is plus one to our Kent truck accidents and our Smallville tally board. We'll tally it up at the end here, but this is plus one to that.
I'm so glad you're counting this because it, like, watching it with my parents, it was just like, God, they blow up a lot of trucks on this show. You know, like, it was every episode.
Their insurance has got to be through the roof, right?
Right.
No wonder the Kents are always in such financial trouble. but we pull back and we see that it's Roger Nixon, Lex's reporter for hire. He has a detonator in one hand and a camera in the other. So he blew up the truck to test Clark and now has evidence that Clark Kent is more than meets the eye because in our previous episode, Obscura, he had been watching Clark and had seen him perform some super feats. So clearly this is just him testing Clark's limits to confirm his suspicions.
Of course. Another character I really liked, even as a kid, like just the idea that this guy's here snooping around these people's business. I really loved all the Roger Nixon stuff.
Absolutely. Him and then Dr. Hamilton, the first Dr. Mm-hmm. Hamilton, Joe Morton.
The first.
Yeah. you know, all these supporting characters on Smallville really brought something. And they were around for a while, too. So mm-hmm. so you got invested in them, and they really played into the whole mythology quite nicely. And you know, in Smallville's little mythology they had going on, for sure.
Totally.
Lionel comes and pays Lex a visit the next day. You know, I'm always guessing, like, what day is it? But, you know, I guess this is the end of the school year, so it doesn't really matter. they're taking their finals, whatever. But Lionel comes by to goad Lex, because he that's what he does best, right? And yep. It turns out that Lionel is on to Lex's plan to have an employee buyout of the Luthor Corp plant. And he has bought the Smallville savings and loan, which obviously where all these people, you know, have their money and their mortgages and whatnot. Can people do this? Is this a thing? Like,
you're asking the wrong guy. But again, like, I loved that was where this plot was going. You know, I love that was his move. It's so Lionel, you know?
Mm-hmm. And also so Lex, because, you know, he's Lionel. Let's face it, he's pretty much the comic book Lex on this show for a lot of it, you know,
for his
business moves and his scientific experiments. So that's their way of having their cake and eating it, too. But it's so good, it covers up any other kind of contrivance issues I might have with Lionel Lex.
Agreed. And also, just like the like you were talking about earlier, just the character of Lionel Luthor, especially seeing him now fully formed after a first season, it's just such a strong character in addition to the world. Even just the visual of him growing his hair out to spite his child.
Absolutely,
is just
I
such
totally think that's what he did.
Amazing thing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what he was doing there. To stick it to Lex.
Yeah, and they never really talked about it, but it's just like you see them in every scene and you go like, you imagine him saying like, real men can have this head of hair, you know?
And a full beard too on top of
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
But, yeah, and you know, that's another character. Now, I'm sure they had plans for John Glover because he was in, you know, the very beginning. He was in the pilot. He's actually in the first scene of the series. But I don't think they thought Lionel would evolve into the character, you know, he would. I think because John Glover and Michael Rosenbaum had such great chemistry, and the writing was always there when Lionel was there, and then he became a regular, and he just kind of grew into just this mainstay of Smallville, another spoke on the legend, as you said. But, you know, Lionel finishes off the scene with a great quote. He says, Lex, if you're going to take me on, son, you're going to have to take your game up to a whole different level, which is, you know, epitomizes their relationship, right?
If only he knew.
If only he knew. So come back, you know, enough of this adult stuff, right? We've had fertilizer plants and banks and all that. Let's talk about
spring flings.
Yeah, let's get back to spring fling, right? So I've never heard of a spring formal before. It's undergrad prom is what it is.
And, right. Like, what the hell is a freshman doing going to a prom?
You know, and I often think, you know, the writers of this show, they remember high school, but they don't remember when certain things are supposed to happen. They're like, oh, yeah, prom, that's in high school. Yeah, but they're freshmen. So, like, in Stray, the first episode, they talk about, like, the spring formal kind of thing. They refer to it as prom. Like, oh, Chloe wants Clark to ask her to prom, you know.
And really?
Chloe's picked out a dress for prom, and maybe I'll ask him to prom. And I guess somebody down the road figured out, oh, you know what, they can't go to prom yet. So it's going to be the spring formal.
Here's another just quick question, and if it's something that is established on your show, forgive me and cut it out. But like, do they reference the fact that they're freshmen in season one?
They do, because that's the whole crux of the pilot, where
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was about freshmen, the Scarecrow thing.
Yeah, the Scarecrow thing. Right?
I wasn't sure. Because, like, growing up, like, or watching the show, they feel so comfortable in school. Like, it doesn't feel like it's new to them. So when we got to season four and they were still in high school, it's like, oh, okay, I guess they were freshmen in season one, you know?
Yeah, that the show would have been better served story-wise if they were, you know, juniors or something. But right. Obviously, you don't have a lot of longevity there for your concept of show. If you're going to have a show about high schoolers, they need to start when they're freshmen.
Totally.
And that does create some weird situations. Like, one, Chloe is the editor and the only person that works on The Torch, apparently.
Took it over from whoever graduated last year,
the entire staff was seniors, I guess. And then you have Whitney and Lana, who've been dating for a long time, as inferred several episodes, including this one. And you're like, how old were you guys when you started dating? Was she like 12 and you were 15?
Right. And like, if you're 18, she's 14 years old, man.
Well, yeah, let's say 15. Let's be fair.
Okay, but still, dude.
Yeah,
look,
yeah.
She's Kristen Kruick, so she's gorgeous. I get that, but come on, man.
Not worth going to jail over, Whitney.
No.
So as I said, let's get back to the Smallville drama. Let's get back to the high school drama here, right? They are freshmen, and Whitney and Lana are going around high school here, and we're in Smallville High School again, and just, like, saying goodbye to people, and Clark and Chloe are having a conversation at the same time, and Chloe starts to show some real strong insecurity about, you know, Clark and Lana and stuff. And she's like, Clark, I just have this nightmare where once Whitney leaves, you're going to run to the bus station and declare your undying love for Lana. If you do that to me, Clark, I will never speak to you again. And it's kind of a, she kind of prophesizes the end of the episode, huh? I mean, obviously not for the reason she's afraid of.
No, but more or less, you know, she's still going to be crying as she deletes her photos of the night at some point.
So sad. You know, Clark tells her, Chloe, I'm going to the spring forum with you, not by default, because I want to. And, you know, Clark, I don't know, man. I think it is by default. Because
it is, but it was the right thing to say.
Right. So there you go. Yeah. Lesson learned from Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Kids, okay?
He's dating for attention, but at least he's being nice to her here.
Yeah, it's something, you know, being a Clark fan, C-H-L-A-R-K, I always look back on these episodes and like, oh yeah, man, these are my favorite episodes. The end of season one where Clark and Chloe got together. Yeah. But you watch him again, you're like, no, Clark is pretty much on the fence the entire time. Like,
yep.
He still has one foot in the Lana pool. So that, and it's unfortunate. But
yes. I admire you for setting yourself up for failure to like Clark, you know, the Clark ship so much. Because it was just never gonna happen.
Nothing but heartbreak.
No.
So after this, we go back to the Talon, and Roger Nixon is there, and he confronts Clark and says, my name is Roger Nixon. I would like to write a story about you. And Clark, you know, tries to shoo him away, and he says, why weren't you hurt in that truck explosion? And Clark's like, I was nowhere near that truck. And he Nixon starts to corner him, and then Lex shows up out of nowhere. This is like, this is probably the most contrived scene of the episode. Like, Lex just shows up at this time.
Same thing. The scene started out of nowhere, so
it almost felt like this was a longer scene they had to edit for time. Like, it just really felt, you're right, it was very abruptly, but
I'd buy that almost if, like, after the last Talon scene with Lana and Clark, if it was gonna then become this, you know, if they just cut that end of it off and put it as its own scene somewhere else.
Maybe so. But then Lex shows up, and Nixon's like, Lex! And this is awkward moment where, you know, Lex doesn't want to admit that he knows this guy, so he's like, you know my name, but I don't know yours. Lex Luthor. And he's like, oh, I'm Roger Nixon with the Metropolis Inquisitor. So Roger picks up on it, and he plays along. And then Lex kind of, you know, he trash talks the Inquisitor and shoos him away. And then kind of asks Clark, hey, what was that all about? And Clark's like, oh, it was nothing. And Lex says, all right, well, if he gives you any more trouble, let me know. So that sets up, and that this is something that will, you know, plant the seeds for confrontation, you know, in the season premiere. Because, you know, the Roger Nixon plot is something that affects the Kent family as a whole.
Oh, yeah.
So after this, Clark goes home and tells his parents about the situation. He says that, you know, he's pretty sure now that Nixon blew up the truck, so it was no accident.
Gee, Clark, what tipped you off?
Yeah. You know, I do appreciate the continuity. He says, ever since Phelan, I've been so careful. Now, Phelan was the crooked cop back in the episode Rogue, who saw him using his powers. So, because it's true, because Clark is very brazen about using his abilities. I mean, you guys have joked about on your podcast about how, like, Clark Kent, just as himself at the Daily Planet, is like you know, levitating things and using speed. And like, what are you? You're just asking for it, man. What is your problem? But here Clark has no secret identity at all, so he has no margin for error. And he's throwing doors off cars and speeding places. And anyway, if people asked Clark just a few more questions, they could have found out his secret real quick.
It makes you wonder why it took Lex 7 years to figure this out.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, but Clark would always conveniently lose his powers at at strategic times.
True.
Right when Lex is about to figure it out, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So the Kents are talking about this, and Clark also reveals to them that he thinks Lex has the missing piece of the spaceship. And they're like, oh my gosh. Well, you know, Clark, just act like normal, take Chloe to the dance, and whatever you do, stay away from that storm cellar. Well, thank you for saying that, Jonathan, because as it's revealed, Roger Nixon was outside using like a parabolic dish to listen to their conversation. So now he knows that, you know, the spaceship's probably in the storm cellar. So they're just planting the seed. It's a very slow burn with Nixon in this episode, and I appreciated it. You know,
we
see him get the pieces he needs. You know, he goes to the Luther Mansion next to talk to Lex. this is a pretty funny scene because Lex comes in and Roger's like, "Oh, you wanted to see me, Lex? I'm surprised you even remembered my name."
Yeah, so, this is too. He gets the key real quick too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Because once again, Lex just has that thing sitting on his desk. So so Nixon finds it, puts it in his pocket, and leaves. And and this is a good scene between the two of them, as they always are. But Nixon has a Lex calls it a new sense of self assurance to him, because he's really cocky about it, because he has all the pieces. I mean, he knows where the spaceship is. He's got the key now, and he even threatens to Lex. He's like, look, if you do anything to me, I'm gonna tell the Kents that you turn me on to them. And so of course, you know, Lex doesn't want that to happen. So he lets Roger kind of do his thing, but he says, you're playing a very dangerous game. You better pray you're not wrong.
It's almost like he won't last much longer.
Yeah, it's almost as if he has an expiration date on his
very
character.
Strange. Anyway, it's probably nothing. Keep going.
Yeah. so this is the part where his next scene is where Clark is in his loft trying to tie his bow tie.
real just quick nitpicky point on this. If you're going to get dressed in formal wear, this goes out to the listeners, everybody, don't do it in a barn.
That's true. You know, we very rarely see Clark's room.
Right, but he has one. Maybe you should get dressed in there.
But does he have a full-length mirror in his room? Maybe not.
I don't know. Okay, fair point.
but no, you're right. We I don't know why they never show us Clark's room. Obviously, it's a lot easier to shoot in this giant barn set than
right, and
it's room.
Probably a very expensive set. And, you know, like, I get it. But it was just like, when you're putting on formal wear, please go inside.
Yeah, this is a working barn, you know? I mean, they are farmers.
It's not even your tux. You rented it. Don't get it dirty.
What's the cleaning fee for Al's formal wear?
Totally.
But so, you know, I can't tie a bow tie, can you?
No, I can't.
Yeah, I'm all about the clip-on. But Lex can. Of course he can, because he's high society. So Lex stops by to see Clark. And, you know, for many reasons, I feel. There's a lot of kind of undercurrents to this scene. Obviously, Lex is afraid of what might happen with, you know, the whole Lionel closing down the plant situation. He probably also has the Roger Nixon stuff in the back of his mind, because Roger has said, like, look, I'm going to show you the evidence tonight. That there's something to Clark Kent. So, you know, Lex doesn't know where that's going to lead. So he basically just comes by to reaffirm their friendship.
And presumably part of the reason he comes by, too, is to see if Roger's there.
Yeah, maybe so.
But this is where, like, Lex gets very condescending to Clark sometimes in these early seasons, because he's so much older than his 15-year-old friend. But, like, he keeps doing, like, the, oh, today's your big day. Oh, very progressive of you. And it's just like, shut up. You know, like...
Yeah, he, that's right, because Chloe has to pick him up because the truck exploded.
Right.
So he says, Chloe's actually picking me up, and that's why Lex says,
because your pet reporter blew up my truck, like, you know, like.
Yeah, because Lex asks, oh, what happened to the truck? And Clark says, oh, it's a farm accident, you know how it is. That's a pretty classic Clark Kent excuse. Now, you know, I had forgotten about this until I rewatched Smallville for the podcast. You know, Martha has a car. She has this sedan that we never see.
Good point.
But we see it in, you know, two or three episodes. And it's like, so why can't we just use that? I mean, I know it's kind of a big deal with, you know, the truck blowing up and all that. But it's like they have a car. Do the Kents just not want to be left at the farm without a car? Like, oh, yep, sorry, Clark. Point. We're keeping our car, buddy. But, you know, they have a little bit of a foreshadowing conversation, as Clark and Lex always do here, right? They're talking about how, Lex is describing his relationship with Lionel as complicated, and it's built on lies and deceit. And any relationship built on those is doomed to fail. And he says, lucky we don't have that problem, right, Clark? And Clark's like, yeah, lucky us. I guess I don't mind this because I really like all these Clark and Lex scenes. I mean, this would be an obvious, oh my gosh, here they go again with their foreshadowing. But I feel like it worked here.
No, I agree. And it's just like, it's a good scene, and besides the fact that it takes place in a barn, it's a good scene in general to build up what's coming, because like this is the first time we see the wind starting to pick up a little bit.
Yeah, another slow burn with the
yeah,
weather
getting
worse.
Beautiful visual thing that they keep up throughout the episode, and like nobody's talking about tornadoes, but when it happens, you feel like it's earned, you know.
Mm-hmm. So let me go back to Whitney and Lana, and they're walking through Smallville High School one last time, looking at the trophy case, and before they leave, they pop into the gym where they're going to have the dance, and Whitney, it's empty. So Whitney's like, where is everybody? And Lana says, the setup committee goes home an hour before the dance to get ready, which I thought was funny. They just felt the need to include that dialogue.
I thought the same thing.
It's like, oh, okay. I guess you anticipated nitpickers. It's like, where's everyone at this school? But luckily for Whitney, he has his Lifehouse CD handy, pops it in a boombox, cranks
everything.
Yeah, he
must have been a fan of the pilot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. This is kind of like the Smallville love theme in the first season. Yes. I love this song, and probably because of Smallville, but it's great. It's great. It's so nostalgic. It really takes you back to the early 2000s, man.
It's probably the only reason I love it, but yeah, because watching the show, I was in love with Lana Lang too, and that was the anthem for people that were in love with Lana Lang that could never be with her. You know,
indeed. So they have a nice moment here. Whitney tries to talk a little bit to her about, you know, things, because obviously things are not as good between them as he would like them to be before he's leaving. But she's like, oh, let's just dance. So they have a nice, it's a nice quiet moment. We have some quiet moments here in this episode. Like, you know, Clark and Chloe get one later. Whitney and Lana get one now. And it's a good moment for them. So, you know, Chloe picks up Clark at the farm. And I love her car, by the way.
Love her car. Yeah. Love her dress. She just looks adorable.
Yeah, so adorable. And she's so happy. And he's so happy. And it's like, oh, in the fields. Everyone's so happy. It's great, you know. This cannot last.
No, exactly. And just, like, again, to think where the show's going to go. Like, she's going to be in The Matrix in a couple years. You know, like, it's just nuts.
So
but
true.
Here she is, just so happy to get her corsage on. You know,
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that endears me most about Smallville, the high school stuff. You know, the growing up stuff. And yes, the show became more superhero action and Superman oriented, but that's really not what the heart of Smallville was. You know, it was about, you know, Clark and Lex and the friendship and you know, learning to be a man and all that stuff. You know, that was what Smallville was all about to me.
Agreed.
Oh, and there is a cool moment here where, you know, she's pinning the flower on Clark. She's like, oh, did I get you? He's like, nope, because he's made of steel, right?
I didn't even catch that moment. That's
and
great.
That's the kind of nice little stuff that I do like. Very clever, very clever little stuff. But they drive off in Chloe's car, and we see Roger Nixon is creeping again. He's creeping again on the farm. He sees they leave, and I guess that's his cue to, okay, I'm going to go look for this spaceship now. So then we run into Pete again at the dance, and he's there with Erica Fox, who we mentioned in the last episode, who we never saw before or since. But here she is, and he has a date, so that's great.
And I did listen to your last episode, because she's supposed to be the hottest girl in school, right?
I thought that was Lana Lang, right? Is there?
Fair enough. But at the same time, I was like, oh, okay, she's pretty. Good job.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I believe it, right? But good for Pete, right? Who knew? Who knew? Because I thought he always had this bravado about him as a ladies' man, but I always thought it was all talk. But I guess he walks the walk, too, so good for you, Pete. So they asked Chloe to like take some pictures of them, and she says, yeah, I guess he wants some proof that this night actually happened. That's a pretty funny line by Chloe,
which I guess it goes to your theory that like he's not actually a ladies man, but he lucked out this time.
Well, you know, they're just freshmen, right? So
good point. They're 15.
Yeah. So Whitney takes this opportunity to talk to Clark. He asked Lana to go, you know, bring the car around because time for some man talk, honey. Why don't you go to the car? This is a good scene between Whitney and Clark. I really like it. He starts out. He's like, you and I have had a weird year. You know, it's so that's the understatement of the century, right?
Remember when I tied you up and stripped you down naked in the field?
Man, those are the days.
Yeah.
But It's a good final moment between them. And basically, Whitney says, look, I've done some things I'm not happy of, and I just want to let you know that, I'm sorry. And Clark says, I appreciate that. And they shake hands, and that's a good moment. But then he asks him to quote, look after Lana for him. And, what does that even mean? Like, what does he expect Clark to do, right?
I don't know if you got this vibe, too. Like, it felt very much like the scene out of the first X-Men movie to me, where it's just like, you're going to tell me to stay away from your girl?
Yeah.
If I had to tell you that, she wouldn't be my girl. And then at the end of the scene, it's just like, stay away from my girl.
Yeah.
It's very much, it's so macho bullshit. And then it's just like, it doesn't even mean anything. You know, like you're saying, like, what does that mean?
Right. It's like, you want me to, it's like, you want me to not date her is what you're telling me, right? Okay. I got you. Right. But that aside, I did like this final scene between two of them. And I felt like, this needed to be addressed. You know, their year, and then what things were going to be like when he was gone.
Sure, for sure.
And then they drive off, Lana and Whitney drive off in their truck, and Lana and Clark have this, like, gaze at each other, and she waves to him, and I'm like, this is not appropriate. Go back to your date with Chloe, Clark. come on. And then, Chloe does come back, and she says, hey, what was all that about? And Clark says, oh, it was just guy stuff, which I thought was pretty funny.
Again, just, like, highlighting it at the end. Just, like, this macho stuff. Just can't deal with.
So they get to the bus station, and Lana gives Whitney the Kryptonite necklace. So that was an obsession of mine for several episodes on the podcast. Like, because, she would wear it, she wouldn't wear it.
I didn't even make a note of it because I knew you would bring it
up. But now we have definite, like, okay, it's gone now. It's for now, right? It's gone.
For now.
So there'd be no more discussion about it. But, in the episode Leech, they did at least try to tie it up where Clark gives her the necklace back in the lead box that Lex gave him, which was cool continuity. Yep. And he tries to play it off as like, I think you need to move on from the past. But it's really like, hey, I want you to stop wearing this so I can hang out with you. That was the real
motivation. That's all really well done. That's another replica too, by the way, that is for sale, but it's just a little too expensive.
Yeah, didn't that come with like the Lana action figure back in the day? Wasn't
there I just meant the lead box too.
Lead box. Totally right. Oh, okay.
One came with the action figure. And then the same replica props site that sold us our keys sells one of the necklaces, which I bought. But they also sell that box from Alexander the Great or whatever Lex says.
The armor of St. George, I believe.
Oh, excuse me. But yeah, that's just a little too expensive, that prop for me. But they've got some good stuff.
So, calling back to our tangent earlier about how old are these kids, right? Lana and Whitney are at the truck stop, and they have a last embrace, and he's like, I loved you the first moment I saw you. I was like, but if you guys have been, let's just assume you guys have been dating for, I don't know, let's say 2 years. I think that's fair, right? Because they say we've been together a long time, right? I think 2 years is a long time. So we'll say that. So that would have made her 13. And then maybe they met and she was like 12, right? It's like, what the hell? This is inappropriate.
But we don't have to get into it. They never got biblical, though. Right?
No, it's been established on the show that Clark and Lana were both virgins until season 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, even with her living with Supernatural for a while?
Coach Jason Teague, no.
Okay, gonna call bullshit on that, but keep going.
Clark even
Honestly, I have the same problem in Lois and Clark, but it's fine.
Clark even asked, he's like, you and Jason? She's like, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember this.
Yeah, that's season 5, so.
Look forward to that, listeners.
Yeah, we'll discuss the ramifications of that when we get there. But this is a good goodbye between them. Whitney goes on the bus and he's off to join the Marines. And this is, like I said, this is by far, I think, Eric Johnson's best episode as an actor, Whitney's best episode as a character, Lana and Whitney's best episode, like, as a couple, even though they weren't on in, the best of terms, I just felt like this is, of all the Lana Whitney whatever that was going on all season, this hit the mark, I felt.
Yeah, you're right. It end on a high note, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And then, the storm keeps picking up. Nixon goes to the storm cellar. That we start to cut back and forth between everything now, right? So it's like George Lucas style. All these climaxes happening at once, right? So Nixon goes down to the storm cellar. He's got his video camera in hand. He untarps the spaceship. We have that going on. And then we cut back to the Smallville High School dance. And this is possibly the most meta thing to ever happen. We have Remy Zero on the show singing the theme song. Not like the song Save Me that's like on their CDs and whatnot. No, the theme song version of the, the theme song that you just hear every week. What did you think of this?
My honest reaction, I totally forgot this happened. And just the minute I saw that one, it was just like, Remy Zero. Oh, God.
Or to quote Pete, yeah, Remy Zero!
Remy Zero, because we have to say the name during the episode.
Right.
But, I was watching this as a middle schooler. I had the CD because this is what, you know, before the soundtrack for the show came on, this is how you got that theme song. Mm-hmm. I totally admit to buying the CD, but at the same time, it's just like, oh, man, guys, come on.
And then Clark tells Pete, hey, I really like these guys.
That and Chloe, it just so happens Chloe's favorite song is a Remy Zero song. Yeah, so that was lucky.
Yeah, Perfect Memory, which is actually my favorite Remy Zero song. It actually is a really good song.
I like Hollywood High, but
we'll debate Remy Zero after we're done. But this is the only time that songs were played more than once in an episode. Like, everything was in the pilot, right? But then it was also in this episode by Lifehouse. And then Perfect Memory was in, I believe it was, I don't know. I think it might have been Kinetic, I believe.
Oh, really?
Or Zero,
is it brought up in that episode as Chloe's favorite song?
No, it's just in the background. Okay. It's whatever episode, and see, they've all started to blur together for me now, sorry. Together. Smallville is the blur.
Hey!
Anyway, it's the episode, the last scene where Alexa and Lana, like, start their business partnership to open the town.
Oh, right. Always a good move when you're a billionaire to start a business with a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well, you know, it was with her aunt, who has since disappeared.
Who's around so much.
Yeah. But they played that there, and then here it's obviously Remy Zero playing their own song. So I like that a lot. And, Pete says, oh, did you know this is Chloe's favorite song? And Clark's like, why do you think I requested it? And Pete's like, that's what I'm talking about! So Pete has just devolved into hype man here, you know, just complete one-liner hype man. But I really like this song, and then we get some good juxtaposition. It continues where, you know, Chloe and Clark start dancing. Alana's driving back from the bus station. She's crying. She's all emotional. She's just seen Whitney off. And the storm really starts to pick up, and then Alana gets hit by this, like, row of mailboxes and crashes into a ditch. Which is pretty extreme. And then she gets out of her car and sees that these three twisters, like, converge in, like, this super twister. So things are getting pretty serious.
Which is awesome, by the way. Like, what a great finale. They're spending their money right. They're doing practical stuff. They're doing CG stuff. Like, it all just looks awesome, even still, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for 2000 CGI, I bought the twisters.
Totally.
I'm glad they resisted the urge to have, like, a cow fly by her window.
Yeah.
Because think about it. This is not too long after Twister. This is only about 5 or 6 years after.
No, you're right. And they do a bunch of episodes later on that are very, like, tied into movies.
I'm gonna get into that, because, you know, they got out of the Freak of the Week formula and just did the insert plot of movie here formula, like, and the Furious, John Q,
Fast
you
the Furious,
know,
Safe House of Wax was a weird one.
Why
that was
they
a real weird one. John Q, though, I remember liking that episode, but I'll be interested to hear what you say about it when you get to it.
I didn't really mind the Freak of the Week formula, to be honest. Pick your poison, right? I mean, they got to come up with 22 episodes a season. Give them a break, okay? Give them a break. So they, you know, to our point there, there's no Freak of the Week this episode. So I'm glad they didn't, you know, resort to that. A natural disaster is such a great thing, a great, you know, obstacle for Superman to fight, because it's nature, it's life, you know, it happens, and he can't defeat everything, you know, so, like, he can't always save his dad from a tornado, you know what I mean, Matt?
God, let's not get into that. But let's say, going off, like, my favorite Superman comic ever is Superman for All Seasons, where, like, at the end of that, he's dealing with a flood in Smallville, and it's just so grounded to see that character deal with something that's natural. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. You know, executive producer Miles Miller had this to say about the finale. He said, "We had always wanted to do the twisters. We always imagined that the end of the season would be the prom and the twisters, not the spring formal, the prom is what he says, and the twisters. The idea came from a true story we heard on the radio about a high school that was hit by tornadoes on prom night." So there you have it. So this was always kind of the end game for at least season one. And, you know, it tied everything together quite nicely. Because, you know, a storm is coming, so the Kents, where do they go? They go to the storm cellar, a logical place for them to go during a tornado. And, you know, they go down there, and Roger Nix is down there, and he has put the key in the ship. And I like how the key, like, so he pulls out the key when he gets to the ship, and it kind of, like, shakes, and obviously it's interacting with the ship somehow, flies out of his hand, does like a turning of the dial into the ship, then goes into it, and it starts to turn on. That was really cool.
Yeah, I love there. That it's almost putting the combination in.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
too.
In. Because nice. You know, as we know, this key does many things. So it's the most used, overused, and abused prop on the series.
If you have an octagonal indentation in Smallville, I know what's supposed to go there, you know?
I remember, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but, in season two, we have the infamous Kawachi Caves, right?
Kawachi Caves.
They have the octagonal hole in the wall. And, when we first saw it, I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to be some kind of weird, time travel thing where it's like an indentation, clearly this is not an access panel. But no, I thought
Yeah, I hate to tell you, Zach, but
that's exactly what it is.
Also, not the only place in those caves where that key is supposed to go.
So. Oh my gosh. Oh, goodness gracious. We'll get in there down. Oh my. That hole's not even octagonal. It's like a slot. Come on.
It's just a slot. Again, I need to preface, I love this show.
All this is going on, and Jonathan loses temper, because Jonathan's a hothead. That's been established. And Roger says pretty much the worst thing you could ever tell Jonathan Kent. He says, "I'm going to tell the whole world about your son." that is the worst, the number one thing you don't want to tell Pa Kent, right?
You're asking for a man who would never kill to kill you at that point.
Why they're having this scuffle, the ship turns on, and it kind of catches everyone's attention, and then Roger takes his opportunity to sneak out. The storm cellar, and Jonathan runs after him. Martha tries to stop him, and she's like, "Oh, the storm." He's like, "He knows everything. I will not let him destroy this family." And he runs off, and Martha's like, "Jonathan!"
Just awesome.
Such a really powerful scene, I thought.
So cool, yeah.
And because you don't know at this point, I felt like they did a good job of Jeopardy here. Not that they were going to kill off Jonathan Kent in the first.
No, but they could have.
Season, you know, yeah. I mean, who would have thought that Jonathan Kent would die by a tornado, right? That'd be crazy.
Yeah, right.
But, you mentioned Superman for all seasons, and, in that story, Jonathan does get swept up in a tornado, and Clark saves him, and that's how he, first discovers he can fly. So there were lots of elements at play here. A lot of people are in danger. I mean, they certainly were going to kill Lana in the truck, but I definitely Jonathan was a possibility.
And especially, they ended that with him, with Clark there, so obviously she's going to be fine. But, again, Lionel is in jeopardy. He's not from the comics. We have no idea what's going to happen to him in the future. He very easily could die. And Jonathan Kent's in jeopardy, Jonathan is alive in the comics, but there are cinematic versions of him where he dies early in Clark's life, so it's very possible.
Yeah, he dies more often than not these days.
Exactly.
So the ship's coming on, and Jonathan's run out into the storm, and, Lana's in a ditch, and the Jordanaires are coming their way, and meanwhile, we cut back to the dance, and Chloe and Clark are having this nice moment, and they're about to kiss, they're about to have this passionate, romantic kiss. And again, it's interrupted by some dopey professor on a microphone. I'm like, are you kidding me? When you're 15 years old, you're about to kiss someone, you're gonna fall through on it. You're not gonna be interrupted.
Totally. And the way this guy interrupts it reminds me of Huey Lewis in Back to the Future. Yeah. It's just out of nowhere.
You get that megaphone feedback and stuff.
Yeah, you're just too darn loud.
So this dopey professor, I don't know what the high schoolers, teachers are. This teacher, he's just like, hey, there's a storm coming, it's on the south side of town, everyone needs to stay in the gym for your own safety, and Clark says, oh, the bus stop's down there, Lana's there, and Chloe's like, Clark, I'm sure it's fine, I'll just go call her on my phone, I'll be right back. So she, takes a few steps, turns around, Clark is gone, and we get this pan out shot, this dolly shot up from the gym floor, and Chloe's looking around, and her worst fears have been realized. Clark has abandoned her at the gym. The circumstances are not as she had feared, but the end result is the same. And then, Lionel, for some reason, has decided to come to Luther Mansion to goad Lex yet again.
In the middle of the storm.
But his interest in this scene is epic. He opens both doors, the lightning splash. It's straight out of a horror movie or something. It's great. So much presence for Lionel. And they start to argue, and it's revealed that Lex was going to use his mother's stock to fund his buyout, which I really don't understand the mathematics of, but I'll go with it.
I had the same thing. I'm like, why is the stock still in her? Wouldn't it have been divided up between, presumably she left her stocks to Lex. Wouldn't it just be in his name?
Right, because he's over 18, right? So,
It's not like she just died either.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, the surprise funds are from your mother. That was an unnecessary twist, but I guess it was just to get Lionel back in Smallville for this situation. And
get him angry again.
Yeah, so they get really angry, and, they're confident. confrontation is about to get physical. Like Lionel grabs him by the neck. It's like, I'll bury you, and everyone in Smallville takes your side. So it's escalated from their normal verbal back and forth.
Yes.
And then the storm hits just at the perfect time, crashes through the windows, and it crashes like support beams coming down out of the ceiling. Now, okay, so Lionel gets crushed by this one support beam, so he can't move.
Yes.
Right? That's completely understandable. Like that's realistic, right? But then this other support beam comes down, like, with a jagged edge on it, pointing down at his face. It's like, okay, guys, I think you went a little too far with the Jeopardy there, right?
I get what you're saying, but, like thematically, I love it. You know, it's basically handing Lex a loaded gun and being like, there's no witnesses around, do what you're going to do, you know?
Well, and Lex, you know, he got hit by, like, a bookshelf or something, so he has a bloody eye, right? So we have
he looks awesome, all jacked up. Like,
yeah, this is
so
like
cool.
An awesome visual, because you see Lionel, he's like, Lex, son, help me! And all you see is Lex, he's just looking down at Lionel, like, with this, you can see the wheels turning behind his eyes,
mm-hmm.
like, well, I could just let nature take its course here. And the whole visual with the lightning flashing and his bloody face, it's just really, really well done.
Agreed. It's such an amazing moment. It gave me the chills watching again, because I haven't seen this in years, you know, but it was just like, oh, yeah, it could have happened right here, you know?
Yeah, this could have been. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every finale could have been a series finale. This could have been where Lionel died and Lex just, you know, and this darkness stayed with Lex and he became his father. And this could have been like the spaceship turns on and tells Clark he's from Krypton and, you know, Clark runs in the tornado, learns how to fly. Like, all these pieces were in place, right, for it to be the last. Like, if there was one more hour, that could have been the end of the show.
Yeah, totally.
But speaking of Clark running the tornado, this is the last scene. We get this cool, like, point of view shot, like, of Clark running at super speed, which we don't get very often. So it was cool to see that. We see him. He sees the truck that the Lana's in. He stops, and he's like, Lana! And she sees him. She's like, Clark! Lana! Clark! I had forgotten that she had seen him. You know, I mean, that creates a whole, and that starts her down her secrets and lies obsession for Clark for unfortunately several seasons. But they see each other and then the tornado picks up the truck and Clark says no and he runs in the tornado and then we stay on it for a few more seconds and then we cut to be continued but they keep the sounds of the storm going too.
I know,
so it's a very abrupt, like, unsettling ending, because it's not like you know, like, one of the most famous cliffhangers ever is like Star Trek: The Next Generation, right, where Captain Picard gets assimilated and then, like, Riker's like, Mr. Worf, fire. It's like dot 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 dot. Right, there's none of that. It's very understated here. It's just like
they let the danger of a tornado hitting a small town really kind of sink in there. It's really awesome.
Yeah, and that's Tempest, man. I mean, that's how it ends. And what a way to end it. Like what a well done, just every plot line was well handled in this episode. This was an excellent episode, I felt.
I agree. I'm so glad that you had me on for this episode. Like, I'll come back whenever. Any freak of the week, whatever. I don't care. When Lana falls in love with the beast that can only be out at night, like, I'm in. It's fine. But I loved getting this episode.
So how goes the bailout?
I'm not sure, Clark. I think it's going to get ugly before it gets better. My father's dead set against me succeeding.
Why would your father be against the plant?
We have a complicated relationship, Clark. My father wants me to believe it's built on trust, but it's not. It's built on lies and deceit. Any relationship with that foundation is destined to fail. Lucky we don't have that problem.
Lucky us.
I want you to know whatever happens in the next few days, I'm still your friend, and that's never going to change. I hope you feel the same way.
I do. What do you think's going to happen?
I don't know. Just got a bad feeling. Kind of like when you could smell the air change before a storm.
Storms are a way of life around here, Lex. Trick is not to get caught out in the open.
Look after yourself.
Tempest got a 9.1 on IMDb. Now, Smallville has finally broken into the nines. Very impressive score, even on IMDb's screwed up scale. Because as we all know, starting next season, I will not reference this fact anymore. But I'm just going to hammer it home now. IMDb, right? It's a scale of 10. Everything is like 6.5 to 9. Like that's the real scale. You know what I mean? But 9.1, pretty good from IMDb. And then Neil Bailey on the Superman homepage gave this episode a 4 out of five.
Out of five, okay.
Yeah, so he says, I mean, it's interesting. So he wrote, these are reviews that he wrote as he was watching it back in the day, right? This is his opening paragraph here. I'll just read it so you can get some perspective on why he didn't necessarily give it 5 out of 5. He says, I'll start off by saying that this didn't turn out to be as cool as I thought it would be. That said, I'll say that it could have been much worse and, in fact, was not bad. Now, does that... I know, right?
There's a compliment in there somewhere, yeah. I guess.
Now, does that not sound like a patriarchal political figure trying to describe something they can't put their finger on, but don't want to offend anyone? It does to me.
That feels like a Superman fan going, oh, at the end of this season, he's going to fly, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the best part about this is, in his next couple sentences, is I was jazzed when I watched this episode, much like when I went to see the new Star Wars movie last week. Incidentally, I was more than satisfied with episode 2. That's when this was written, okay? Episode 2. This just turned out to be another episode of Smallville, however. That's not really a bad thing, considering all things considered, for it was a pretty good episode of Smallville. So
I think everything he just says has to negate everything, any sort of, you know, stance that we put him on, because that's just... That's just wrong, is what he said.
Episode 2 is the worst Star Wars movie.
Agreed. And this is a really good episode of Smallville.
This is, okay, I'm going to go on record right now. A+ for me for this episode. This is the best episode of Smallville so far. I love this episode.
Totally fair.
It was excellent. Of course, we had our nitpicks. We were joking about it, but that's what we do as huge fans, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's to be expected. Not every episode is going to be 100%, but, you know, you got to give some kind of scale here. And if this is not an A+ episode, I don't know what it is. So I'm giving it an A+. What about you, Matt?
I wrote down a 9 out of 10, so I'll stick with that. But yeah, no, I agree. This and the pilot of Smallville is just so damn strong. So, like, yeah, these are definitely the best two out of the season, which is good. You know, start strong and end strong.
Yeah, a 9 out of 10, that would probably equate to an A. So giving it a solid A, I agree.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's tough because, like, I feel like I could give so it's like my grades don't matter, right? There's just some sort of scale to kind of, it's fun to look back on and see how they all, you know, lay out with each other. And it's like, oh, well, what makes the plus in this episode? Look, I don't know. Right. I'm just saying, like, this is the best episode, my favorite episode of the series so far, because it's a season finale. So they can actually do things, right? The story can move forward. You know, somebody mm-hmm. can find out Clark's secret. You know, I mean, you're not going to, you know, in a 22 episode, you know, for the most part, 22 episode seasons for these series, this stuff's not going to happen in episode 6, right? They're going to save. Smallville was, I'll give it this, for all its ups and downs, it really brought it in the season finales and premieres. And this was totally. Started this long tradition.
And this all, like you're saying, like, this sets up probably the best season premiere they ever did. Like, I love the first episode of next year.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to revisit because as with any two-parter, especially when part one is so good, it's hard for part two to live up to the hype because you spend right. the whole summer, because, you know, I watched the show in the summer. This whole summer, I was like, oh, man, is Clark going to fly? You know, because mm-hmm. you're thinking, oh, he's going to save Lana from the tornado and he'll be floating or something. And then who is Lionel going to die? Is Jonathan going to die? How's Chloe going to react to all this? And what are they going to do with the Luther Corp plant? Because obviously that's still a huge thing. So there's so many things. So you talk about this with your friends over the whole course of the summer, and you get back and you're like,
Oh, I'm sorry. I might have been the only one going like, well, what happened to Roger?
Yeah. Happened to that video camera yet?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all things that need to be addressed in the season premiere. So I'm looking forward to talking about that as well, to see how well it holds up now that I've revisited part one here.
I look forward to your episode on that, because I like that was a season premiere that I rewatched, like taped it off, you know, when it aired, and just rewatched it over and over again.
Funny you mention that. I recently found, I posted this on our social media, I found my old Smallville tapes, or at least some of them. and they re-aired Tempest and Vortex, like, as a quote-unquote movie event, which basically
really?
Means they just aired them together. You know,
right.
But I did tape it. I haven't watched any Smallville tapes in years, but I might pop that in and just see how it all plays out. Just to watch them together as one experience.
Totally. I would love to see that just for like the end of every episode where they're like, music featured in this episode was from REM or whatever, you know?
I bought that REM CD, by the way, the 20 years of REM.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. So it totally worked on me. Thanks, WB Marketing Department. But
yeah, really good
job,
guys.
I have VHS tapes till about season 6, and then
good for you.
Yeah, and then I don't know if I have them all still, but I know I have them. I found my first like seasons 1, 2, and some of 3 already. Then, you know, obviously I got a DVR after that, and was like, okay, well, I can't really keep these, and we'll see. But
also the seasons were coming out on DVD pretty regularly.
Yeah, so you didn't really
point,
need, so and then, you know, there was so much Smallville at that point, it wasn't like I needed to rewatch season one, because, yeah, when you had season one, that's all you had, so of course I was going to rewatch it, you know. But but yeah, those and the trailers, the episode trailers, I love those. And I try to post those before every episode, so I'll be dipping into my VHS tapes to grab those, and because a lot of them are online, but a lot of them aren't. So I'm gonna try to fill in the gaps with what I have. And then I'll put the call out there for any listeners or anybody who's fans of the podcast. If you have access to VHS tapes with WB promos, let us know. Put it on YouTube. We'll feature it on the show. But yeah, just a great episode. But we do have a couple of matters of business to attend to here, Matt. We have our Smallville series tally board. So what this is we've been tallying up, you know, all the tropes of Smallville.
Oh, I am a listener. I know what you got.
So we have several categories. And, you know, this episode actually only had one additional number, and that is a classic Kent truck accident. So do you want to guess which number this is in season one?
Ooh, okay. I listened to your show, but I don't know that well. I'm going to say 8.
Oh, okay, we're at 5 right now.
But... Oh, okay. But still, that's a lot of trucks. They're not rolling in it, you know, like these poor people.
Well, this is why. This is why they're not rolling in it, right? So, you know, my friend Lance Laster, he was on the first episode with me, and he predicted there was going to be 50 Kent car accidents for the end of the show. I think we're a little behind that pace, Lance. Sorry. But I don't know. Let's see. 8? No, 5? What did I say? So there's
5.
Okay, so there's 10 seasons. You know, we actually are on pace.
So why not?
Wow. But we are on pace for that.
There's no reason for him to take his guess back.
I guess not. Lance, I was ready to rub that in your face, but I guess it backfired on me because doing the math, that would be 50. And then, you know, I also like putting every episode to the Bechdel test, which is when two women have a scene together where they talk about something other than a man.
Yes, and I was thinking about this while I was watching this.
Not only do we not have that, we don't even have a scene with two women together, so it's a fail. you know, that's not a sign of quality. It's just an interesting, just trivia. You know, I just find it fascinating. Though, and I said this last week, if you apply like the reverse Bechdel test to Supergirl, it would fail all the time too. So don't be haters.
Right.
Haters gonna hate,
but
the player's gonna play. All right. All right, well, one last thing before we wrap up for the season. I do want to open up the Smallville mailbag one last time this year and read some emails we got from our loyal listeners. Thank you so much, guys, for emailing in. I love it when to hear from you guys. And to know that people are out there and listen to what we're saying here and are fans of it, it's a great feeling. So I just want to do a shout-out to Varun Hans. He wanted to let us know that you know, he's a big fan of the show. And he said, I came across Smallville when I was in the 4th grade. I was watching season 3, and I was hooked from then, and I watched every episode and every season of Smallville. Funny thing was, I never knew Smallville was about Clark Kent becoming Superman until the end of season 4. Which, I don't know, I mean, that's very possible.
I guess, yeah.
And it got me even more excited, and I never miss an episode, and my favorite season of Smallville is season 4, which I understand you didn't like. Which is fine. It's your opinion. But season 4 will always be my favorite. Keep doing the podcast, and I will listen to it every week when you post. And remember, always hold on the Smallville, Varun. So thanks so much, Varun. We definitely disagree about season 4.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
You're wrong, Varun, but it was nice of you to write in.
I've actually had, because, you know, I don't hide my feelings about season 4 being, you know, the worst season, I think, of the show. And a lot of people are like, oh, man, I love season 4. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Teach their own. Then got James Spahn wrote in. He says, hey, Crows. So I like that. Thanks for this. Thanks for that.
Wait, what's his name? I'm sorry?
James Spahn.
I heard James Bond. I'm like, what?
Spahn. James Spahn.
Okay. Still a cool name. Good job, James.
So, hey, Crows, I just wanted to thank you for a fantastic podcast. Smallville was always on the edge of my radar during its original run. I saw a few episodes here and there, but never really dove headlong into the show. Well, since discovering your podcast, I'm now neck deep in all things Kryptonian. In the past month, I've been binge watching the show and are currently halfway through the 4th season. Why is it always coming out of the 4th season? Nexus of this show, I swear. While the show's writing isn't always even, the performances of both John Schneider and Michael Rosenbaum are iconic. I absolutely agree there. Welling's Clark Kent is an obtuse and earnest joy to watch, while Glover's Lionel Luthor is devilishly compelling. I even discovered Glover is from my hometown, Salisbury, Maryland. Top it off with the discovery that a friend of mine's aunt used to date John Glover in high school. Small world, eh? That is a small world. That is very
weird,
interesting.
Yeah.
Salisbury, Maryland. Never heard of it, but I'll look it up. He goes on to say, not only has Always Hold On to Smallville given me an appreciation for the show, but it's also rekindled my childhood love of the Man of Tomorrow. From the 5-foot S emblem flag hanging in my office at work to my devouring of endless Superman trade paperbacks, I'm in love with the character all over again. I even started a Twitter at KryptonianSun1 and a blog. And I owe it all to Always Hold On to Smallville. Thanks so much. Sincerely, James Bond. P.S. If you ever want a guest host sometime, I'd love to be on the show. You guys are awesome. Well, there you have it, James. We'll be in contact. We'll hook you up. We'll get you on the show, buddy. Thanks for emailing. I appreciate that.
And awesome.
The title of his email was A Humble Fan. So thank you so much. One more from Rebecca McDonald. She says, hey, Zach and co-host. Hello from Nova Scotia, Canada. Canadian. So the home of Smallville.
Yeah, really?
You probably walk down these streets, right? I'm a big fan of both Smallville and your podcast. Thanks for doing such a great job every week. It's really fun to rehash these episodes. My sister and I tune in every week. She goes on to talk about the episode Crush that we did a couple weeks ago. So thanks for writing in about that. And goes on to say, anyway, thanks again. Looking forward to this week's discussion, Rebecca. So thanks so much, Rebecca. How close is Nova Scotia to Vancouver? That's a really American question, I guess.
Such a question that two Americans cannot answer right now. So.
If Nova Scotia is anywhere near Vancouver, let us know if you've ever been to Smallville or anything like that.
I don't know. Nova Scotia sounds foreign, beautifully exotic. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then finally, Corey Moore. Corey Moore writes almost every week, and he's got great stuff to say. So thanks, Corey. You had this to say. Hey there, thanks for the podcast and keeping Smallville alive. Overall, I really enjoyed Obscura. The bad cop was a low point for the episode. My favorite scene was when Lex showed up at the Kent farm and gave them a check for the loss of their cattle from back in the Zero episode. That's pretty funny about the story of when Chloe and Clark first met way back in eighth grade last year. I never realized that error until your discussion. Those two must have had major growth spurts. Fifth or sixth grade would have been a much better choice. P.S. Can't wait for your Tempest review. Well, here it was. Hope you enjoyed it, Corey.
Wow.
Now, Corey did something special for me. I made the call out. Me and my episode Crush, me and Nancy were talking about how many times do they say the name of the episode title in the episode, right? So okay. I made the call out to the fans to do this, and Corey took it upon himself to add them up. 7 times so far has the name of the episode been mentioned in the episode itself. So.
I thought you were going to say, like, overall 7 times. I'm like, wow. Really?
Oh, the series. No, just in season 1. Okay. This is actually a new category I'm going to add to the series tally board. So it'll be on this week's tally board. Even though Tempest, I don't believe anyone said Tempest episode. Quote the Tempest.
Tempest in a teapot. Like, yeah. Lionel could have said that.
Yeah. That's always, I don't know. Sometimes I find it very clever, and sometimes I find it extremely annoying when that happens. But,
But
thanks so much, Corey. And Corey, actually, speaking of visiting, you know, Smallville locations and sets, Corey and his family actually visited the Kent farm, the location they shot the Kent farm at a few years ago. And
that's awesome.
So he sent me some pictures, and I'll be posting them on the social media coming up here. So keep an eye out for that. It's really cool to see, like, he's at the windmill and the sign. Obviously, the sign doesn't say Kent Farm anymore, but it's the same, like, the entryway. It's instantly recognizable. The farm had the little yellow house in the background. So he sent me some really cool pictures and said it'd be cool if I shared them. So keep an eye out on social media. I'll be posting those in my hiatus. With that to say, I am going to take a little bit of a break, probably about a month.
Good for you.
Because, look, I love Smallville. All right, I will always hold on to Smallville, but every now and then you need a break, right? You need, I need to recharge my fandom batteries, and also, you know, I want to get some podcasts in the can, you know, that way, you know, I don't run late. Sometimes I've been up against the clock, and I've been late or missed a week here and there, so I just want to kind of take some time for myself to relax and do other things with my life.
You know, we're doing the same thing, so good move.
Yeah.
Mental health break from podcasting is a good thing.
Feel free to go back and listen to our back catalog of episodes. So we have 21 episodes now, and then 3 Superman specials, 2 of which are about Batman v Superman. So go listen to our thoughts on that. You know, to be honest, Matt, I'm sick of talking about Batman v Superman. I've talked about
it for
months. Everybody wants, I mean, I'm the Superman guy, you know, everybody knows that in my circle, and everybody wants to know what I thought about this and that. I'm like, oh, I'm so over it. Can we talk about the female Ghostbusters instead and hate on that?
That's what I'm going to see this afternoon.
Oh, really?
I'm excited to see
it. Okay, you know, it's, to me, it's not about the whole female thing. It's about why remake Ghostbusters, because that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, no, I get it.
You remake Ghostbusters, Back to the Future is not far behind, right? So I just, I don't know, but that's just my look. I've heard it's not as bad as everybody said, because look, regardless of what you thought about how the movie was going to be, those trailers were horrible. Those are some horrible trailers. So.
Oh yeah, totally. But like, you know, the Batman v Superman trailers are pretty good. So what's that mean? But hey, thank you so much for having me on, Zach. This is awesome.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. So if people want to find you and your podcast on the internet, where can they go, Matt?
Sure. Let's do the podcast first. It's Lois and Clarked, as in it's a Clark with a K, comma D. So it's loisandclarkedpodcast.com. We're also on @LoisandClarked on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We have an Instagram that we're bad at keeping up with, but we have that too. And then personally, I'm @MattTruex on Twitter, and @MattTruexWasTaken on Instagram. So that's me. This week too is a big Smallville week for me. I'm going down. I work Comic-Con with the company that I work for, but on Saturday, I've got a free day, so I'm dressing up as Justin Hartley, Smallville Green Arrow, and going to be walking around like that for the day. So.
Oh, yes. That is some hardcore cosplay, my friend. That is like, you send me a picture and I'll post it. I'll share it if you're cool.
Oh, by all means,
on the social media. That is hardcore, man. Like the most I have done, like, to dress up as Superman is I've done, like, the whole Superman shirt under the suit with, like, the shirt open with some glasses.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm very impressed. Now, did you, like, customize a costume or make that yourself, or how'd you do that?
I did. The costume is I bought, you know, like, it was made overseas, bought it on eBay, customized a crossbow to be pretty much exactly like his. Like, I even reached out to somebody that I'm not supposed to talk about, but who had photos of the original crossbow prop. So it's very accurate, and it folds, and it's going to be cool. It's going to be really hot. I've never cosplayed like at a con like this before, so it'll be interesting walking around in green pleather all day, but
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, when I went to Comic-Con, I did, you know, what I said. I walked out, you know, that's Comic-Con's this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll have to post my flashback pictures to when I went to Comic-Con. I did my standard, as I said, my standard Clark Kent suit and Superman undershirt picture costume for that. So that was a nice tangent from your about you about your contact information there, Matt. As for me, you can find me personally at MoronZach on Twitter. That's MoreOnZach. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Mallville on Twitter with one S. You can also find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And send us an email, as several of our fine listeners had, and we read out this episode. You can send us that email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, again with one S. Well, Matt, it's been awesome having you on, man. It's fun talking Superman, talking Smallville. A lot of fun. We'll definitely have you back on if you want to be back, brother.
I would love to. For literally any episode, if it's trash or if it's awesome, I'll come back.
Yeah, they're both equally fun to talk about, like the terrible episodes and the awesome episodes. It's the middle ground that's like, all right, let me get through. Oh, is the one where Lionel Luthor gets shot? All right, let me get through this one. You know?
Especially in like 8 years when you get to season six, like once Green Arrow comes on, like, please let me know. Like, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and then especially after he leaves, that'll be fun too. Oh boy, it'll be a long road ahead. But yeah, so we're taking a hiatus, but we will be back to talk about the next 9 seasons of Smallville. So until then, always hold on to Smallville.